You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. If there's one thing Australians have to thank Apple for, it's the iPhone. Whether you love them or hate them, the recent launch of Apple's ubiquitous little device has started to change the attitude of telcos when it comes to mobile broadband. Anyone who has a mobile broadband device knows that as soon as you plug it in and turn it on, you can easily use a couple of megabytes of data just by checking mail or opening a web browser. The couple of megabyte entry plans offered by some of the telcos would blow the budgets of those who use these types of plans in one power-up of an iPhone. Seeing a looming ACCC and TIO controversy staring them in the face, Telstra has changed their entry-level data plans to something a little more iPhone-friendly, which will also benefit casual mobile broadband users. In a press release dated July the 31st, Telstra Consumer Marketing and Channels Executive Director, Ms. Glenys McAlan, said that with more than 4 million 3G customers, Telstra had increased its understanding of mobile data use, as well as enhanced network capacity and spectrum following the closure of the CDMA network. As a result, the company has changed some of its mobile broadband access fees. The $10 mobile data packs will now include 150 megabytes of data, up from a mere 20 megabytes. The $29 mobile data pack will now include 300 megabytes of data, up from the mere 80 megabytes. And excess data usage rates have been reduced on these two data packs. Admittedly, it's just a start, and there's a long way to go in this country. But this certainly makes an iPhone usable to a point. After all, you've got to keep in mind that Telstra runs the only 850 MHz 3G band in this country, and this will be good news for rural users. Another catalyst to keep in mind is the Beijing Olympics, which will get underway in a few days' time. The potential for exceeding data allowances will be great over the next few weeks, especially for sport-loving Australians around the country. More plan changes also this week with 3's new iPhone plans, and they don't even sell the device in Australia. Yet. Designed to entice people who have bought unlocked iPhones and want to use them for all they're worth, 3's new caps will be sure to attract city-based mobile broadband junkies. For $49, you'll get $350 worth of calls and SMSs, 300 minutes of free call time to other 3 users, and 1 gigabyte of mobile broadband. Pay $69 and basically everything doubles. Are we about to see a new broadband price war in Australia? Let's hope so.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
we take a look at mobile broadband in Australia. Beijing kicks off in a few days, so Adam looks at the feeble TV offerings in this country. China's internet conundrum, Apple release 10.5.5, and we take a look at the take-up of naked DSL in Australia. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, 3 start selling iPhone plans without an iPhone. The Great Firewall of China seems to be crumbling. One of Australia's largest online retailers goes belly up. And Microsoft used Beijing Olympics to boost Silverlight take-up. This is Tech Talk News. Telstra has increased the data download limits of its $10 and $29 NextG plans by up to 650%. Customers with $10 mobile data packs will have access to 150 megabytes of data, up from the previous limit of 20 megabytes. And customers with the $29 data packs will now have access to 300 megabytes of data, up from the previous limit of just 80 megabytes. The data limit increases comes hot on the heels of last month's iPhone launch, which has led customers to question and compare data rates provided by competing telcos. The rapid take-up of the iPhone and similar 3G devices recently has prompted warnings from the ACCC of the risks of using caps and excess charges that come with data usage. The increase is said to be a result of network enhancements enabled by 3G direct tunnel technology and the spectrum made available by the closure of Telstra's CDMA mobile network. Australia's city-centric mobile phone carrier, 3, is launching a range of plans geared towards iPhone users who have unlocked their devices. Despite heavy campaigning through its customer base, 3 is the only one of the four major mobile phone carriers not to have a license to sell the iPhone. 3 is offering high data usage allowances of up to 2 gigabytes with its plans, most likely as an attempt to encourage customers to switch over from the current carriers, which recently have been under fire about the amount of data they provide. Plans start at a $49 monthly cap, which provides $350 worth of talk and texts and 1 gigabyte of data. The only legal way to unlock an iPhone in Australia is to buy one prepaid through Optus, then pay an extra $80 to unlock it. Customers will pay around $809 for an 8GB device using this method. These plans are available as of today through 3. The Great Firewall of China is coming down. The International Olympic Committee is now adamant that no deal of any sort was struck between it and the Chinese authorities over internet censorship at the Games. The IOC says the talks of such a deal this week has been a misunderstanding and that it's negotiated better access for Chinese and international journalists. But the internet access in China is not fully open. Websites that offend the sensibilities of the Communist Party are still banned for the population at large. IOC Press Chief Kevin Gosper said international media should have been told that they would not have completely free access to the internet before they arrived to report on the Beijing Olympics. Kevin Gosper has been the public face of this controversy and has been forced to apologise to the world's media for misleading them. He explained how he ended up in the media maelstrom.
What's been happening is that two things. As the international press has arrived, they've found some of the technology working very slowly, and that caused concern. But secondly, at a press briefing on Monday, could have been Tuesday, I think it was Monday, BOCOG announced that certain websites would be inaccessible for the international press, and that caused a terrific amount of concern. It raised doubts as to whether the IOC and the Chinese, BOCOG, may have moved into a different arrangement. I questioned that myself, was concerned because I had been making it very clear that we would provide uncensored access to the internet for the international press at Games time.
The Chinese position seems to have changed as we rapidly approach the opening of the Games of the 29th Olympiad, from one of there will be full and open and free internet access to the rather more restrictive we will provide reporters with sufficient and convenient internet access. This current easing is only for foreign journalists, and it doesn't appear to be for the average Chinese national. Thousands of buyers on the online shopping and auction service eBay have had their fingers burnt, with one of the biggest Australian sellers being placed into liquidation. But people who bought goods from the Queensland-based company with eBay's preferred payment option will be assured of a refund. eBusiness Supplies was one of eBay's biggest sellers, turning over $15 million last financial year, selling products as diverse as vibrating armchairs, but the Brisbane-based operation is now being liquidated and 2,500 customers have been left waiting for their goods. eBay spokesman Daniel Filer.
The overwhelming majority of transactions on eBay are trouble-free. I think what we're seeing here is stated by the seller themselves, is a business issue, and unfortunately, that is a sad fact that can happen to businesses, whether they're on eBay or off eBay.
Queensland police are already investigating 12 allegations of fraud in relation to e-business supplies, and other states are expected to follow. eBay's preferred payment method, PayPal, has agreed to refund their customers. PayPal's Australian Managing Director is Andrew Pipolo.
We're actually not liable for it, but it's something that, because of the circumstances of this particular seller, the impact on such a large number of buyers, we've made the decision to make a fund available to cover the expense.
And finally, webcasting of the Beijing 2008 Olympic Games by NBC and MSN could be the Trojan horse that gets Microsoft's Silverlight 2 onto a large number of PCs in the United States. Silverlight is Microsoft software for delivering rich internet applications. It competes with Flash, which Adobe claims is installed on 99% of internet-enabled PCs worldwide. NBC and MSN will be showing more than 3,000 hours of live and on-demand content during the games, with up to 20 simultaneous streams from at least 34 sports. Individual users will be able to watch up to 4 streams simultaneously, and Silverlight automatically and dynamically adjusts with the network conditions. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Firefox. Have you loaded up the new Firefox 3 browser yet?
I'm using Firefox 3 right at the moment.
Oh, good. The technology that we're talking about here is it's so easy to implement properly, and it makes so much sense to implement properly.
But the catch is, in order to install a third-party app, you have to jailbreak your machine to load it. Yeah, so you have to load special software onto your iPhone.
ACMA, good luck. We wish you the best.
Walking, talking fembots, ready to meet your every need.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my odd spots were bad.
Oh, no, absolutely. I just think it's a fairly ordinary state of affairs.
Yeah, we've done projects with organisations in the US where, for technical help, web chat's fantastic.
Yes, well, you won't get an argument out of us on this panel, I don't think, at the moment.
If I press number one and press send, it calls speed dial number one, which is my wife.
Now, that's ambiguous in itself, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Sorry to have missed you, but I'm at the doctor's having my brain and heart removed so I can be promoted to our project management team.
Oh, that's harsh.
Oh, dear.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, sitting across the panel from me this evening. Two very willing and able gentlemen with laptops ready to take your questions and all that. Dr. Graham and Dr. JD, because Dr. Ron's currently in an aeroplane over
airborne
the south,
somewhere, yes.
Over the south about. China Sea, looking for used oxygen canisters, from what I can gather. So, yes, he might be tuning in later if he can find a broadband spot. He's threatened to, so he will be joining us from the UK, I think, in the next few weeks while he's on assignment over there.
Very good.
Trying to drum up people's interest in Tech Talk Radio, amongst other things. How's your week been, boys? Anything exciting happening?
No, not really.
It was a fairly nonchalant news week this week, too, I thought.
A few things going on, though.
Oh, yes. Yes, we're getting very close to this international frisbee competition in Beijing very shortly. I'm not really that interested in it, to be quite honest. It's Adam is sort of along the same line of thinking at the moment, too, just purely because of the fact that the television coverage here in Australia could be so much more than what it actually is. Instead of rather giving multi-channel stuff out and let's seeing it for its true digital worth, no.
You could have a different sport on each of four standard def channels or something like that, but no.
Yeah, nah, not here, not in Australia.
No.
And by the way, it is Channel 7's last go at the Olympics.
It goes, is it really?
Yes, 2012 in the UK, in London, is the realm of the Nine Network along with Foxtel. So maybe it's just the last hurrah for Channel 7 as they bow out. Anyway, we'll
Bruce
talk.
Bruce doing his accolades.
Oh, he'll move to Nine. He's got 4 years to change, hasn't he?
Oh, there you go.
Silly me. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. Big news this week, which we'll also talk about shortly, is the re-release of all the telcos' phone plans, thanks to the iPhone. We do now have something, whether you have one or not, be thankful for the iPhone. And that is, we've got
new
a bit
data
of
plans.
Data. They've given us data at long last. They've realised that, hey, there's more to this voice, this phone thing than voice. So now we can all
rest assured that we can plug our handsets in and use a bit of bandwidth at the same time. Ooh, that's coming up also later on the show. First up, though, let's talk about Naked DSL, because this is the new improved version of the way you can get DSL to your house, whether you're a business or whether you're a residential person. It really is a great technology because you now no longer have to have a telephone line connected to the telephone network or dial tone.
Well, you still need to have a telephone line, but you don't need to have a telephone service on your telephone line.
Yes, you're exactly right.
I'm trying to just make things a little bit more confusing for everybody. But
absolutely, yeah. When you usually pick your phone up, you get dial tone.
Yep.
You can get rid of that that dial tone-y bit and just have a DSL thing. So you can't make phone calls on it or anything like that. And theoretically,
unless you use voice over IP.
Yes, that's right. Well, that's what most people are moving towards these days. A huge, huge trend towards VoIP.
Mm.
And everyone's sort of heading down that way. Now, anyone here? We've got a naked DSL service literally a few moments from us, just here in the other room, actually, at the radio station we're at the moment.
Okay.
That's a cost-effective way of bringing broadband into a house if you don't want to pay the line rental, because it can save you, what's residential line rates these days, $29, I think, on Telstra?
Don't know.
Oh, yep. Good. You pay the bills over there. But I know business is $34.50 or something like that. So you can lose that charge in a naked DSL service if that's the way you want to go. Now, it is taking off. There's several ISPs that are offering this service at the moment. I'll just go through a few of them briefly. AAPT, Adam Internet, Amcom, FTEL, Exatel, IINet, Internode, iPrimus. Just to name a couple, sorry, AAPT aren't doing it at the moment. I said they were, but they're not. FTEL are about to be doing it. It's got to look at the popularity of it, I guess. Looking at what IINet, which is an ISP, who are IINet? They sort of ended up being the, who are the mob in Sydney? I can't think of their names at the moment. Fairly big.
Aren't they the Aussie Mail offshoot? Yeah.
Aussie Mail. They were the people who got bought and consumed and sold in one of those large corporate takeovers. IINet are actually doing quite well with it at the moment. They've got 25,000 customers and climbing for naked DSL. Internode, a third of all sign-ups are now naked DSL sign-ups. iPrimus, in the thousands, single-digit percent of total sales, so, you know, not doing as big over there as other places. But yes, Telstra obviously have no interest in it, for obvious reasons. They'll lose a bit of revenue, wouldn't they?
They're more phone customers.
And Optus, well, I don't think they know what naked DSL is at the moment. They had a bit of an outage during the week, did you hear about that?
Another one?
Yeah, apparently. Yes. Why are you with Optus? Yeah. Anyway, that was a bit of a faux pas on their behalf. But yeah, they're having as much luck as Qantas are at the moment. They had 3 in 3 weeks. Optus are up nearly third strike for this next week too. So, do you have anything Optus?
Quaking in your boots if you're an Optus customer, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Have you got anything Optus?
Yeah,
mobile?
my mobile and my company mobile.
Oh, good. So you could go and have a chino somewhere, and no one could get in touch with you for a couple of hours. See, there you go. If that's the way you are.
You see, everyone with the iPhone thought the wireless problems were the phone's fault. Well, they're still unresolved, but yes, obviously Optus aren't helping things.
There you go. So there's a bit on the current technology when it comes to naked DSL. So I think,
yeah, I'm not convinced. I mean, naked DSL, it's a good idea if you're in a situation where it's going to help you, and I can understand someone where their home phone line is their only line, and they're going to go entirely voice over IP. But in a lot of places, I mean, all of my customers, virtually every single one of them, their fax line is direct line to their fax machine.
There's a concept,
and that's the ADSL line as well. So.
They combine the fax line anyway.
Yeah, because they're wanting to keep a fax line anyway, we put the ADSL on that line. It goes direct to the fax machine. It doesn't go through the PABX.
Doesn't the ADSL the fax take the ADSL out when they get a fax?
No.
Okay, that's not what telephone companies are telling us all. So it's good.
Works perfectly.
Bit of data, bit of low frequency data mixed with a bit of high frequency data, and it works well.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. But
it's got to put a good quality filter on it, and that's all you need.
Well, that's the key to it, isn't it?
That's always the key with ADSL.
So you don't have naked DSL anywhere? Do you know anyone who uses it, Graham?
No, I don't. No. Mm. I wanted a phone line at home because I've got the odd customer that I still need to dial into to get past firewalls and things.
Mm.
So I wanted a phone line I could dial on, particularly for customers where I can support them if their internet connection is down. I can dial into to get behind the firewall. So I wanted a phone line on my connection at home. And as I say, most of the customers, it's shared with a fax line or something like that.
I've got a fax. It's on a duet system.
Oh, yeah.
No one ever uses it these
days. That's a duet system.
It's where you get two numbers on one bit of copper.
Oh, and they ring differently. Ring patterns. Oh, yeah. That's clever. Yeah.
It costs you $3 or something like that to have it on another line, but just the fax is clever enough to pick it up and deal with it when it rings funnily, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Good grammar, huh? All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Graham, Dr. JG, Andrew McComb this evening. Dr. Ron is many miles above the surface of the planet as we speak, heading to the Northern Hemisphere. We have our chat room going this evening at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We are streaming globally through two Windows-serving devices this evening, so come along and have a listen. Yep. No one's been complaining about anything breaking up at this point in time, so I think we've got that problem nipped in the bud.
Got an extra streaming server going.
New streaming server up and running.
Yeah, they've got a bit more capacity as well, and hopefully in the future we'll have a Shoutcast server on a faster connection as well.
Absolutely. Well, so, watch out, world, here we come.
So if I can make the Shoutcast work.
Absolutely. Come along and join the guys in the chat room at the moment. They're all talking about things from Optuses and Macs. We should talk about Macs, actually, because, JD, as you came in this evening, there's a new issue with the iPhone. They're starting to crack,
There's all sorts of things going on, which is a bit disappointing. I mean, the only real fault that people found with version 1 in the States was that the speaker and microphone were a bit dodgy. But we've had the hints about wireless issues, and now there's reports of cracks coming into the plastic back of the case.
Ooh.
How do they crack? Are they too thin?
I don't know the reason for it, but it's more pronounced in the white iPhone because you can see them because they're sort of black cracks that get dirty, whereas the black iPhones there are less obvious. But there's some fairly nasty photos of damage where the cracks occur around the earphone connectors and buttons and so forth. Oh. Looks really quite nasty.
Okay. Well, have you seen anything firsthand, or is this just what you're
reading? No, just off the web.
Mm. Okay. Well, it's also cracked in a few other places too, which is the back end of the iPhone, which is the broadband plans, which the telephone companies have been offering. Now, just sort of chatting in the office and putting 1 and 6 together and coming up with 23, we've come to the conclusion that there's this thing called the Olympics fairly shortly, which a lot of people with their iPhone will be going, oh, look,
I'd be interested in that.
I can watch. No, exactly. I can watch the Olympics on my iPhone and rack up a $10,000 bill in one foul swoop.
Mm.
And I think the powers that be, I think even in a Telstra press release, they realise that they're coming to terms with what people actually want to do with mobile communications these days, and funnily enough, they've realised that there's a bit of a demand for broadband these days.
How odd.
Yeah, how odd. So anyway, today, two major carriers changed their pricing structures, the first one being Telstra, and the second one being the Hutchison-based 3 network here in Australia. Now, let's talk briefly about Hutchison's 3. They don't even have an iPhone yet. The rumour has it that maybe next month we might see an announcement sort of talking about the pending arrival through Hutchison's, which is very strange, actually, because they're selling it through other branches in other parts of the world, but not in the Australian market. Mm. So wait and see what happens there. But anyway, they launched their 3 pricing today, which, and as I alluded to earlier on in the show, I think it's going to be great for people who generally want to use mobile broadband. You don't have to have an iPhone to benefit from these new plans. But apparently, people being tired of waiting for a licensing contract to come up with 3, they've now come ahead and launched their own pricing, which is basically the same prices as their existing caps are. So, for example, $69, you get all the same things that you get on a $69 or a $49 cap.
In terms of what, phone and SMS?
In phone and SMS and free talking to other people on the same market. So you get something like, I'm talking about a $69 cap here, it's something like about $650 worth of calls included in that. And on top of that, you get 300 minutes, I think, of chatting to people who are also on 3 as part of the bargain, which isn't a bad deal. Now, what used to happen before today is you get a measly pittance of a broadband allowance, which was basically nothing.
Right.
You had to pay per megabyte or something like that to browse the internet. So what they've done today is they've actually added a broadband component. And on a $69 and above plan, you now get 2 gigabytes of data on a 3 plan. And if you're on the $49 plan, you get 1 gigabyte of data. The catch is you've got to sign up for 2 years, so they're hedging their bets a little bit there, because broadband's going to come down really, really, well, that's a fairly presumptuous of me to say that in this current marketplace, but broadband theoretically will come down in price. So it's a bit like interest rates. If you want it now, you can go and hedge your bets and fix it in for 24 months on a contract. But nonetheless, I think it's quite appealing. If someone really wants to play with their new little toy and they want a bit of bandwidth, it's the way to go. Mm. If you want to sign up, whack the SIM in. It's been proven now that you can...
Hutchinson have now got an iPhone pack, which doesn't include the phone, but it includes the SIM and the instructions on how to set your phone up correctly.
Ah, that's what you want. Because it is. Have you ever set a phone up to use the access point for another network?
It can be difficult, can't it?
If you don't know what you're doing, it's like, oh my goodness, it's a big gobbledygook and double dutch. But yes, a little pack like that would come in really handy.
And the interesting trick in Australia, of course, is you don't need a username or password when you set them up. They're all blank.
Why is that, do you think?
I've noticed, Graham,
because
you're the techie.
Maybe it's SIM related, because if you haven't got that SIM, how can you use account, I guess?
I assume it's something like that, but perhaps because in other markets they have a username and password because you might have connections to multiple data providers through the same radio network or something like that. They might have better sharing of resources across between networks, and whereas
heaven forbid we share resources. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah,
that just wouldn't happen.
You'd never connect to an Optus service over a Telstra wireless connection. So
All right. The numbers, in case you want to know, $49 on Three will get you $350 worth of calls and SMSs, 300 minutes of talk time, and a gig of bandwidth. Whereas you go to the next level up, $69 will buy you $650 worth of calls and SMSs, and 500 minutes of talking to anyone else. Now, I dare you to do that, because if your wife's on Three, you can spend hours getting phone calls about picking the milk up on the way home. but it does come in handy from time to time. And everything above that, you get 2 gig in it. So well worth considering. Now, let's have a quick brief look at Telstra, because they've done exactly the same thing. They had the most amazing allowances. I think the $29 plan, which was the casual mobile, no contract or anything like that was required, used to be 80 megabytes of data.
Wow.
Now,
that
much. Now, to give you the equivalent on Three, that same $29 would buy you about 3 gigabytes. Right. So considerably different. Now, Telstra...
Now, bear in mind, though, that in Three, it only works in 4 capital cities in the country and doesn't work if you go outside those areas.
Yes, you roam onto a very expensive option, which is not good.
That is the big difference. It's important to remember you're not comparing exactly the same product to exactly the same product.
And that's why I have 2 SIMs
for
my mobile broadband card. I have one with a T on it and I have one with a 3 on it. So depending upon where I am is the one that I use.
There you go.
Now, as of today, being the 4th of August, these have all changed. Telstra's $29 pack has gone from... What did I say? 80 megabytes up to 300 megabytes, which is a considerable... It's still not much, but it's making the iPhone usable. I reckon you'd easily use 300. Well, I don't know. That's a few websites and a few videos and showing off to your friends, because that's what everyone's doing at the moment, isn't it?
And Tech Talk a couple of times, yeah.
Well, there's a thought, isn't it? You could stream Tech Talk to it. That's $29.
TTR.mobi.
Yes. $10, the old $10 pack, which used to give you about 10 megabytes, why would you bother, has gone up to 150 meg. Now, that is perfectly usable for regular checking of your emails and the odd web page without blowing the budget.
But when you go down below that $29 pack on Telstra, the charge per megabyte if you go over your limit starts to go up.
Racks up a bit, doesn't it?
Excess data usage on the $29 plan is 25 cents a megabyte. On the $10 plan, it doubles to 50 cents a megabyte. And if you want to go down to the $5 plan, hang on to yourself, it's a dollar.
Wow.
Yep.
But that's cheaper than $1.65 if you roam on Three.
Now, Telstra are not providing any data in their plans as standard in their plans either. You've got to get a browsing pack if you want to do it. And if you don't have an add-on and you use the internet on Telstra, they charge you $2 per megabyte for casual usage.
There you go. But anyway, I guess the whole thing is good. Yes, pay-as-you-go charges, $2 for each megabyte. As you say, they've got bigger plans. They go up to a $1,500 plan, which gets you 50 gig a month.
Right.
Everyone's...
I didn't find that one in my research.
I didn't say that was funny, did I? Why do you laugh, gentlemen? Oh, dear. Yes, $1,500.
Well, that'd allow you to stream the Olympics down your iPhone.
It would.
Absolutely. And then some. You could get, what's the standard joke in here at the moment? You could get lost in high definition too on that sort of rate. So there you go. Good news. Everyone's heading in the right direction. It's still got a long way to go, but nonetheless, we've started, I think.
Yep.
Very good. It's got to be good in this country. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Google. Google sheds light on a search process. Google's going to tell more users about where their search results come from, as if you didn't know, which is probably good, really, because Google's raising the hackles of a few people and organisations at the moment about where they're getting their data from, and also about privacy. The company is preparing to roll out a new set of options on its search engine, which will provide details on why the results were ordered in the way they were. The boxes will appear on the top right-hand corner of the results screen and inform the user of the general nature of the ordering, such as geography, recent searches, or web history. Google noted that the search process itself will not be changing, only providing the users with additional information. Do you reckon that's a good way to work out where your web searches are coming from?
Well, the more information, the better, yeah.
Oh, it means you can go back to the source and get more information that way.
Web history is an interesting one, isn't it? Have you ticked the box? Do you tell Google? Do you let Google collect your web surfing history?
No.
It's an interesting dilemma, Graeme.
No, I don't sign into my Google account when I'm searching on Google so that they don't collect my my searching habits.
Why is that?
It's none of their business.
Okay. Purely privacy related?
Yeah.
JD?
Absolutely. Yes.
Just a privacy related issue? Yeah? You don't want the missus to check in and say, where's he been surfing to today and all that sort of stuff?
She can do that on my computer anyway, so there's nothing about that.
Only if they know how.
I'm quite sure she does. No, it's just that if I'm doing some work research and say, well, I don't want people to necessarily know that I'm searching on particular phrases and things.
Mm-hmm. No, it's an interesting issue at the moment because I was reading the other day, a particular couple in the United States had their house photographed. And it was a secluded environment, and they claim that now they know everyone lives. We might talk about that later.
Mm.
And as a result, they've taken Google to the court seeking damages for, stress, whatever you'd seek damages for that type of issue. Anyway, so Google's, going to give us more information about where they're getting their information from. You just got to wonder how much you'll get in the future. Because there's lots of ways you can tell Google about things. Lots of ways.
Whether you know it or not.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, all right. Now, let's talk about China and the Olympics. We've obviously come to the conclusion that we're not potentially going to be watching it for any athletic reasons. But let's talk about the actual issues with the web over there at the moment. Do you guys find it surprising what's come out in respect to the Great Chinese Firewall?
Well, it's interesting that there was a bit of a stir. It's not terribly surprising that things were awkward when you go into a place like China and expect free and unrestricted internet access. That's not a surprise. But apparently now they've opened it up for the journalists in the Olympic Village, but not for the rest of the country, which is also not surprising.
The journalists have always had a bit of a problem, even on the ground there in China, covering certain issues and events.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
There was a program on Foreign Correspondent last week in relation to the displacement of Chinese nationals in and around Beijing for the alleged benefit of the whole of China. They just basically bulldozed houses and displaced them and moved them on.
Yeah.
For the sake of, we need this space, see ya, bye, here's $3.50 and push the house over. Mm. And I'm paraphrasing that, very... very coarsely, I guess. But the same can be said about their internet access. They decided, or when they pitched for the Olympics, they said they were going to give unfettered and open internet access to all the journalists. And when the journalists rocked up into good old Beijing, they found out that there are a couple of sites that they couldn't see. Amnesty International is probably one of the biggest ones, which they've been talking about. Apple Daily, which is a Chinese language website of Hong Kong newspaper that's blocked into China. Obviously, Falun Gong. They have some fairly interesting principles which the Chinese government doesn't really concur with. Human Rights Watch, Liberty Times, Radio Free Asia, a Tibetan website or Tibet website. The Voice of America is also another one of those which has been censored by the Chinese. And that's not to sort of, they're the big ones. There's probably a lot of other little ones that sit down in that list as well. But they've opened it up, allegedly, to journalists. We don't know whether the rest of the Chinese population can now see these websites. But
well, reportedly they can't. It's been reported.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's one of the perils of going to a communist country, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's also been said that one of the reasons to hold an event like the Olympics in China is to encourage them to open up. And of course, there are now more journalists in China than there have ever, more foreign journalists in China, and particularly in Beijing, than there have ever been before. So, you know, there has to be some level of pressure there, assuming that the journalists are doing their jobs and keeping their eyes open and looking around. But, it's disappointing that it hasn't led to any greater internet freedoms for the general population in China. But yeah, if then again, what would you expect?
Too right. If anyone's listening to us in Chinese province, well, there could be, you never know. Let us know if you can see our website.
Are we blocked? We've been blocked. we might be blocked after tonight.
Maybe, you never know. All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Graham Callaghan, JD's here this evening, and myself, Andrew McCollum. We're talking about all sorts of things when it comes to technology. We've just had a bit of a brief chat about the firewalls and stuff like that with China. I'd like to move on to Apple's release of a new operating system, 10.5.5. Is this a result of iPhone issues, do you think?
10.5.5, well, from what I've read, I believe it's only a developer release at this stage,
yeah.
And there's not a lot of information out about it. The speculation is it's actually in readiness for some new product announcements, maybe in September.
Okay.
The MacBooks, people think, are overdue for an update. The Apple website in the US is talking about the countdown of numbers in stock, which would suggest that they're running them out. So the good oil is that there's going to be some enabling power in the new version for these new systems when they're released.
And what about iPhone 2.1?
We talked about this last week.
We did,
memory.
Briefly, yes.
Well, there's certainly the radio issues that I've been banging on about for a while.
Have they addressed those?
I'm waiting to get fixed. There's no mention of it particularly. The only thing they're really talking about is cut and paste. Going in, and
you would have thought that'd be a bit of a giver, wouldn't you? Like, hello.
and the other function was the turn-by-turn GPS instruction capability. Interestingly, just as an aside, some of the web apps that you can download for the iPhone have been going up and down and up and down. What I mean by that is Apple have been removing them from iTunes, in particular NetShare, which allows you to use your iPhone tethered to your PC, use your iPhone as a 3G wireless modem. Mm-hmm. And whilst they were offering this third-party piece of software on iTunes, they've actually taken it down, which now means if you weren't lucky enough to have bought it for $15 or whatever it was, you can't use your iPhone to connect to your PC at the moment.
Oh, I wonder if the consumers know that. I'm sure they do, actually, if they're trying to.
The group that I'm associated with definitely report on a minute-by-minute basis whether it's there or not.
Well, according to the Mac Rumors website, as you've just said, JD, that the iPhone 2.1 beta is primarily about fixing bugs in the first developer release. However, it also provides an early implementation of the Apple Push notification service. Do you know what that is?
Yes, there's some talk about that around as well, that the iPhone is basically going to be connected to data, so your next G data stream permanently. So
I thought it was already, unless you got in there and fiddled with your access point.
You've got to fiddle with it so that it definitely doesn't use data, if that's the way you want to run your machine. Certainly,
well, it depends on what plan you're connected to, but that became a bit easier today.
Yeah, but they're saying that it would be on permanently because it would then be receiving pushed email down either from the Mobile Me website or some other third-party provider.
Now, what we mean by push email is that when your ISP or whoever receives an email, it then sends the notification to you, as opposed to the opposite model, which is where the phone would regularly check with your server to see if there's any new emails there, which obviously is less efficient.
Yeah, that's right. So instead of you...
And costly if you're on the wrong
plan. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so instead of you setting up Outlook, for example, on your PC to check every 15 minutes or half hour, or you manually... You know,
do a send and receive.
Control M, check mail. This will just automatically push it down to you. Say, hey, like an SMS, you got an email here.
That'd drive you crazy if it came in an SMS. I think
expensive too from last week's calculation.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yes, Graham did a calculation here in front of us. I think they were doing it on the chat forum as well too, in respect to the most expensive method of communication. It'd have to be SMS. Bit of a,
only when measured in cost per megabyte,
Well, yeah, but it's quite easy to send a fairly sizable, you send someone a contact detail and it goes over three or four SMSs when you want to
pass it on. Yeah, it does start to add up.
It'll add up after a while. Yeah. That's why if you get on a good plan, it's all free. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We've been talking for quite a bit. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have a view from the couch. Adam Turner's going to tell us all about Beijing and what Channel 7 are doing and what Channel 7, more importantly, aren't doing. and what some of the other providers all around the world are doing. So hopefully we might get a bit of an insight as to what we might expect in this country in 2012, which is when the London Olympics run. In the meanwhile, come and join us on our Tech Talk chat channel. There's all sorts of people going there at the moment. I love some of the names that are up there. Hello, Scruffy Buzzer. Bob from Perth's there. Black Dog with a zero. There's all sorts of people. Kyphony, Russell's in there as well. I'll scroll down a bit further. There'll be some others. So come and say hello to us live while we're chatting on the radio. chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
If you listen to Tech Talk Radio live, you've probably wondered why you can't chat with the panelists in real time. Surely such technology exists. Well, now it does. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. By popular demand, you can now chat real time with panelists and other Tech Talk enthusiasts. All you need is a web browser, an internet connection, and a comfy chair. Monday nights at 8 p.m, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Radio.
You are indeed. Welcome back. Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McCollum here. And across the panel from me this evening, two very capable gentlemen in the forms of Graham Callaghan and JD over Hello. There. So you're listening to us, hopefully on the stream. People are talking about their Nokias online at the moment. So come and join us. Feedback, that's our email address, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au if you want to send us an email. But if you're listening to us live, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Adam Turner's not there this evening. Maybe he got scared off last week. I think he's got a bit of another story too in relation to his telephony issues. Remember that last week?
Oh, okay.
At one stage there, he had two different phone numbers, one coming out of one wall, one coming out of another wall. So I'm not sure what's going on over there, but something else happened, and I think it sorted itself out now. But
anyway. I hope he's still got internet. I hope that's not the reason he's not.
I haven't filled his mailbox up this week or anyone else's for that matter. That's another story too. But anyway, the Olympics are coming, as you know. Starts on Friday. So if you're listening to this post Friday, the Olympics have started, just in case, if you're listening to us on the podcast or something like that. And in Australia, the host broadcaster is the Seven Network, which has traditionally been known for their sporting prowess, having had plenty of experience over past years with Olympic coverages, and not to mention locally here in Australia with things like football and fairly large major events. Anyway, add to that the digital television revolution. Once again, in Australia, we're a bit slow here in the take-up of how we can deliver content. We had to protect, or when I say we, the previous government decided in their infinite wisdom that the pay TV operators in this country needed a little bit of protection. So they said, well, you can certainly run digital, which we've been doing in this country since the year 2000. But now we've hit 2008, finally, high-definition channels can now run different content to what's on the standard definition channels. And as of the end of this year, the standard def channels can run multiple channels of different content. So we've become very much a multi-channel digital thingamabob in this country at long last.
Like other countries have had for some years now.
Oh, look at the UK. And we've got UK listeners, and I'm sure they'll be a testament to this.
We often talk about digital in the UK and how fantastic it is with their multi-channeling.
It's a role model.
Yeah.
Look at the ABC in this country with iView, which that got launched last week. That's been fantastic. They've been well received all around the place. Once again, if you missed last week's show, iView is a new service that the ABC are offering where you can go and watch a full screen image of a program that you may have missed that's been on the ABC. They're looking to do a back catalogue of around 4 weeks. Not quite there at the moment, but if you want to go and watch any of the recent programs or news services or factual documentaries, they're all there.
Yep, and it's pretty good quality, quite watchable, good quality sound.
I put it between...
The only issue is that you need to have
a good connection.
A good ADSL 2 Plus connection. You're not going to do it on standard...
I don't know. I beg to differ there. I tried it on a flat-out ADSL 1 connection.
Flat-out ADSL,
with no issues whatsoever.
You wouldn't want to do it on anything less than an ADSL 1500.
Tried it on Hutchison's 3 mobile broadband.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It was reasonable.
Not quite there.
It wasn't too bad, all things considered. But
and you're about to tell us what the picture quality was like?
Oh, that's right. I was, too. I put the picture quality somewhere between twice as good as VHS and not quite as good as DVD.
Yeah.
Now,
it's about as good as Foxtel on a bad day.
Foxtel on a bad day. I don't have Foxtel.
Well, yeah.
There's a reason why I don't have Foxtel.
Yeah, they tend to overcompress things.
They do. That's, you can only get so many bits and bytes up one bit of cable, yep, really, can't you? All right, so yes, lots to look forward to in this country. But once again, this week, this Friday, sees the commencement of the Olympic Games from Beijing. And Adam's, here's his view from the couch this week, which obviously is not looking too promising for Channel 7, but see what he has to say. Here's Adam Turner's view from the couch.
I'm wondering if Beijing is going to be Australian television's last take-it-or-leave-it Olympic coverage. Hopefully, by 2012, when the Olympics in London rolls around, multi-channeling in the internet will let Australians watch the Olympics the way it suits them rather than the way it suits the television networks. Australia's Seven television network has confirmed that it won't be using its high-definition channel this year to show extra events during the Olympic Games. What you see on the standard and high-definition channels will be exactly the same. Thankfully, Seven has continued its Olympics deal with SBS, so viewers will still have some choice. Under the agreement, Seven will have exclusive coverage of the opening and closing ceremonies, track and field, swimming, rowing, cycling, gymnastics, and will also provide coverage of, quote, other sports featuring Australians, unquote. SBS will broadcast complementary coverage to focus on long-form events such as football, road cycling, volleyball, and table tennis. So in other words, Seven's coverage will be for patriots with short attention spans, while SBS gets the scraps. Thankfully, between them, there'll be hundreds of hours of Olympic coverage. You'll also get some of Seven's coverage on a NextG mobile phone. Plus, there'll be about 100 hours of streaming from the Yahoo 7 online. But most of these will mostly be Seven's existing telecast just reformatted rather than extra coverage. It's also unclear as to how much of the online and mobile coverage will actually be live. By the time we get to London in 2012, hopefully we'll see a very different media landscape. Australia's television networks will be allowed to multi-channel in standard definition as of 2009, which means they can have even up to four channels showing different things at the same time. Hopefully by 2012, this process will be well entrenched, and by then we should be in the final stages of phasing out analogue broadcasts for good. Now, the Nine Network and Foxtel have jointly won the broadcast rights to the 2012 London Olympics, and they're promising Australia's most comprehensive Olympic coverage ever, across free-to-air, subscription, internet and mobile. Multi-channeling should force the networks to completely reconsider the way they televise events such as the Olympics, from a content, advertising and broadcast rights perspective. Unfortunately, Nine's deal with Foxtel means Nine is unlikely to multi-channel the games in 2012, as the extra channels will be locked away on pay TV. Even so, the take-up of PVRs such as TiVo and the iQ2 will give viewers far greater control over what they watch and when they watch it. The idea of networks dictating what screens in your lounge room and when should be fading by 2012, although the networks will obviously continue to fight tooth and nail against such threats to their power. Along with multi-channeling, the rise of internet television will revolutionise the way we watch the Olympics, fuelled hopefully by improved broadband speeds. If we get our act together on the national broadband network, perhaps major sports in 2012 will have their own dedicated online channel so diehard fans can catch every minute of every event. It's already happening in other countries, but as usual, Australia lags behind. For a taste of what Australia's 2012 Olympic coverage might offer, you can look to what NBC is doing this year in the US for Beijing. An impressive 3,600 hours of coverage will be seen on seven free-to-air and cable NBC Universal networks: NBC, USA, MSNBC, CNBC, Oxygen, Telemundo, and Universal HD, as well as NBCOlympics.com. Of this total coverage, 2,200 hours will be via NBCOlympics.com, which claims to be offering the first live online Olympic coverage in the United States. Unfortunately, due to the fact NBC is in bed with Microsoft, it looks like the content will only be available to Windows Vista users. In the UK, the BBC has also embraced multi-channeling in the internet. The BBC is broadcasting 300 hours of coverage from Beijing on BBC One and BBC Two, plus 2,450 hours on its BBC iDigital Interactive channel. Online, Brits will also be able to choose from 6 streaming channels showing coverage from BBC TV and BBC Interactive. Seven's deals in Australia with SBS, Yahoo 7 and Telstra's NextG are obviously steps in the right direction, but they still seem like token efforts compared to what viewers are getting in other countries. It will be interesting to see how the media landscape changes by 2012.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Are we living in the wrong country, boys?
Sometimes I think so, yeah.
Thank you, Adam, for the view from the couch this week. Very informative. And
as
yes,
always.
Having a bit of a read around some of the internet sites at the moment, the NBC site seems to be fantastic, where you can click to pick a venue, sit back, relax and enjoy it. Watch it for what it's worth, whether it's an NBC commentary or whoever, I don't know. And it'd be interesting to see whether they're going to be accessible from outside the United States, or if you're watching to somebody else's, like the BBC, for example, whether you can actually see it outside other countries.
Well, like iView can't be viewed from outside of Australia.
No, to a few, the expats are really upset about that too, let me tell you. Had a few interesting comments with people from overseas saying, but we want to watch it. So anyway, you have to find a good Australian proxy server or something like that to see if you can find another way in. But yes, the state of television in this country is about to undergo a fairly major revamp with the, I guess, come the end of the year when we can now start seeing multi-channeling different content on the different standard def channels, the digital transmission that we have here. But don't hold your breath for any decent content. Another theory that sort of also crossed my mind the other day, in the UK you pay part of your taxes as a television licensing fee.
Now, we used to have that in Australia a very long time ago.
Absolutely. Now, that television licensing fee goes to, I believe, and I'll stand corrected because there'll be someone out there that'll probably know, goes to the BBC or an organisation which distributes money to organisations like the BBC to actually involve better program production, which is why I guess you go along and you can see some shows, well, most of the shows out of the UK that we see on television here, it's just stunning. The production quality is terrific.
Yep.
None of these half-hearted budget things that, you know, made on the smell of an oily rag, which we do over here.
Mm.
So maybe we should bring that back.
So does the ABC still cost 9 cents a day?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Inflation at the moment could be up to 12.
Mm.
So if it's anything like petrol, it could be up to $1.20. So, but anyway, and the Olympics, I think, should be available for all the sports, whether you go to an Olympic website, potentially. Look at it from that point of view. Go to Olympics.com or Olympics.org, and maybe you should be able to stream off their major servers if you have an interest in the badminton or the synchronized swimming or whatever those other sports are, which are what you probably call not too mainstream. Anyway, the digital revolution is armed with the double-edged sword at the moment as it lures the younger generation away from sport, but could also open up the Olympic experience. And that's a valid point. Are younger people going to be interested in the Olympics like older people are? The people that sit there, or because we're so on the move technologically these days, people go, oh, did you watch the opening Olympics? And they look on their iPhone and go, oh, yeah, and then move on. I guess it had come into its own here. Let's say, for example, the swimmers do amazing things and you want to watch that live and you're sitting somewhere in the countryside thinking, oh, the swimmers are on now, but have a look.
Mm.
But would you dare do that, or would you be too scared of getting a big bill from your telco to actually do that? Summer Games was one of the sporting and television highlights for the year recently. So who knows?
I mean, the ideal thing would be to be able to subscribe to an SMS or push email service that said That sent you a message to say the race or the spectacle you wanted to watch is on now. Click here.
Well, the technology is available to do that, but it comes at a cost. An interesting statistic that I have here, the average age of viewers of the 2004 games in Athens was over 40, and it shows no sign of falling.
Mm.
That begs the question, is what's the future of the Olympics going to be? If it's not going to become a television sport, I don't know. It's the youth of today, really, isn't it? All right, now let's move on and talk about the Google again, because we can talk about them. A couple of Googlers, previous Googlers, have jumped ship and they've created their own new search engine, which I've also had a link up for on the Tech Talk Radio website to see if anyone was interested to have a play with it. It's called Cool. Have any of you played with it yet?
No.
Very interesting. Spelt CUIL.com. A startup led by former star Google engineers was unveiled, and it's a new web search that aims to outdo the internet search leader in size, but faces an uphill battle changing web surfing habits. Too true it does. Cool is offering a new search service at cool.com that the company claims can index faster and more cheaply and far larger portions of the web than Google, which now boasts the largest index, which is currently online. The would-be Google rivals say its service goes beyond prevailing such technologies that focus on web links and audience traffic patterns and instead analyzes the context of each page and the concepts behind each user search request. Now, it'll be interesting to see how it develops because I had a bit of a play with it on the weekend, and Tech Talk Radio came up reasonably well in it. It provides information in a unique sort of way. It's not like what the Google experience is, where you get unpaid search on the left-hand side, and you just got to get that out of your mind. But when you go to their webpage, it's all black, basically, and you put in what you're looking for. Then it returns basically three interesting sort of like results along the way with a thumbnail of a logo, which 9 times out of 10 didn't resemble anything like what I'd searched for.
Oh.
So the actual results, too, were, I guess, somewhat interesting, the way that they put a lot of priority in blogs. Blogs were fairly high up, but then it would repeat. Like if you said something on blog 1, blog 2, and blog 3, it would index those before it would index websites. So the results returned were quite interesting. And also, it was very US-centric. That is, there isn't like a Google Australia has Australia version, Google Europe, and all the other particular areas of the world. Well, yeah, it will, but why would you go head-to-head with Google if you didn't have it going at 110%? It's like Apple. Why would you sue a client for ripping off your copyright if you didn't know you're going to win the case? So, but nonetheless, it's worth having a play with. If you jump in there and do a bit of a search, just obviously take it with a grain of salt. It is new, and the guys are obviously trying to fashion it into something which is a little different to what we currently have. Maybe this is why Google's going to show us where they get their search results from. Because these guys aren't doing that just yet, but who knows where we'll end up. But there you go. That's what the new Googlers are doing, or the former Googlers that have jumped camp and gone and started up their own web search engine. Do you reckon, have you been having a look at it, Graeme?
Just having a look at it now, yeah. It's a very different layout, as you say. I don't know.
What do you reckon? There's a...
Well, Google's been around for a long time, and it may just be that, you know, someone has come up with something different that's going to be useful. I think time will tell. No one in this day and age lasts forever. So, it's definitely an interesting one to watch. One thing I do notice about their site is that when you do get results, they provide a lot more context of the results. So you get a much bigger slice of the page for each result.
Who's this? Google?
No,
the new guys, the cool guys.
Yeah. So it's a bit easier to tell perhaps which link you should click on.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, isn't it? But maybe they'll, I don't know, given time and all that sort of stuff, they'll come up with some interesting ways of doing it.
It's possible, yeah.
The other interesting thing too, which I haven't seen any signs yet, when you jump into Google, you can search in certain channels like news and images and things like that, which I think we've all become a bit, you know, accustomed to at the moment. There's nothing like that. But nonetheless, they're having a go. Mm. It's interesting too to note that, I guess, you know, you look at Microsoft, they're having a go at, they're launching Silverlight for the Olympics,
they've been pushing that for a while on their own website, I've noticed. Yeah, it's basically a Microsoft equivalent of the Flash to provide animation on web pages, isn't it?
Too right.
Yeah.
Too right.
We've already got it, so why do we need a new one? Microsoft, stop doing this!
But this is a Microsoft thing. Like, they've seemed to have missed the internet all round.
Yeah.
They've when they first launched their MSNs and things like that. I don't know. They just missed the bandwagon. Whereas Google captured the search. Apple has captured a lot of peripherals and desktop markets. Microsoft is really left in the realms of OS and server technology to a point. And here's another example where don't go after Google because, well, I guess they can if they want to. But once again, don't go after Adobe because Flash is inherently in everything.
Microsoft did the same thing. They distributed some new document format to be their Microsoft equivalent of PDFs, even though PDFs are so entrenched in...
PDFs is now world standard, isn't it? An ISO standard.
Yeah. So, yeah, why did we need another standard? And they're doing it again. Stop doing it. If you know, Microsoft, come up with a new product. Come up with something someone doesn't do.
Innovate or die.
Correct.
Mm. I wonder where they'll be in 10 years' time. Maybe Bill got out. Maybe he saw the light. the Silverlight and thought it was time. Microsoft tells Mac users to get Firefox. Did you hear about this? Two and a half years ago, Microsoft discontinued its Internet Explorer for Mac and firms recommended users to migrate to Apple Safari. Now, today, the MSN video page tells Mac users to get Firefox.
And interesting. Is Safari doing too well on the Windows platform, perhaps?
I like Safari. Well, that's VoiceWare, as Graham calls it. But I must admit, I like Safari. Mm. It comes up with some interesting... It looks nicer. And I think some of the people on our forum have conferred with that.
In fact, it's working better at the moment for me.
Is it?
Safari's working much better for the chat room than Firefox is.
Well, that's good. I'm using Firefox over here, version 3. Why is it better? Is it faster?
Well, this is on OS 10. No, the chat... Yeah, it's faster on Safari for some reason.
I must admit, Internet Explorer, as I do a fair few web pages, I must admit I struggle with Internet Explorer compared to all the other browsers. They seem to just work. Another thing with Microsoft IE, it's just like, Anyway, it's a law of its own.
I think the rumor is that the next version, which is not too far away, I think Internet Explorer 8 might be, is on the horizon. I'm starting to hear more and more chatter about it.
Is it?
And yeah, and one of the things you do hear is that it might be a bit closer to being standardized and behave a bit more, you know,
like it ought to. One can hope. There's a lot of people out there that use IE because that's what the operating system gives you.
That's right.
And it's just not the best web experience that I've come across compared to others. So
no, I still use Firefox as my primary browser.
I don't like the way Firefox renders text, though. But that's from me, my point of view. I like Safari's a lot nicer. It does aliasing and all that better. Let's not get into the nerd alert sort of side of things. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus have again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on ePray, it goes, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Graham Callaghan, and JD in the studio this evening talking about technology and all things. Come and join us on our chat forum, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. It's real time. You can ask us questions. The screen does go very quickly at times, like it is at the moment. It's a blistering pace there as everyone's having a bit of a chat. Glad to see so many people there. G'day, Scruffy Buzzer, Rubber Duck, Black Dog. Ah, they're all there. And, yes, promoting a good level of conversation. Couple of interesting things, too, about Google before we move on. Google says complete privacy doesn't exist. Now, this is what I was mentioning earlier on this evening. In a submission to a court, Google is arguing that in the modern world, there can be no expectation of privacy. Google's being sued by a Pennsylvania couple after their home appeared on Google's Street View pages. Hoping you all know what Street View is. If you don't, it's where you can, if you go to, say, google.com and search for an address in the United States, like San Francisco or one of the bigger towns, you'll notice there's an option there apart from just the map and the overlay. You can see Street View. and you can go down and drive along a street and see people's houses and what people are doing in their houses. And I think even Dr. Ron sent me one recently where there was one in Chicago with a man with a handgun.
Pointed at a child.
Yes, pointed at it. Well, it's amazing what you can see with Street View. But anyway.
Drug busts as well, I think.
Absolutely. You can go to some of the darker, more shadier sides of town and see what you can see. Today's satellite imagery technology means that even in a desert, complete privacy cannot be guaranteed, said the Google submission. In any event, the plaintiffs live far enough away from the desert and are far from hermits. The couple are suing Google for $250,000 in damages, saying that the value of their property has been damaged and that they have suffered mental stress. I don't know how that happens.
Okay.
Mental stress, because they saw their picture on Google? Oh, dear. This isn't the first time that Google Street View has got the company into trouble. The EU is arguing that people's faces should be blurred out of images displayed. Oh, really? Guys, what do you reckon?
Well, you're not supposed to take and publish photos of people without their consent.
Oh, but if you're in a public environment, you can.
Yeah, but if you're in your family home, yeah, I don't know.
No, I agree there, if you're in a family home. But if you're out in the middle of the street standing in a public place.
That's sort of different.
Yeah, well, that's all they're doing. They're driving up and down streets, doing their 3D thing as they do. They did it here in Australia, I think, last Christmas. Haven't seen it yet. Not that I've been looking for it. Might be there now. I don't know. Have a look in the next break. But, yeah, they did that here recently. And I think Sydneysiders came out because they knew they were doing it and did all sorts of funny things.
Yeah. Held up signs and, yeah, made funny things, yeah.
Well, why not? Just enjoy it for what it is rather than look at the sinister side of stuff. But is that an issue with privacy, though?
Well, it
is. Like JD, you've just mentioned having your photo taken in public. Yeah, well, if you're in a public place, I think that's just, you know, fate complete there. But, you know, even when you do television programs and things like that, we get disclaimers, little, you know, document sign saying that you're going to be used and thank you, you give us consent to do that. But that's when you point a camera physically at someone and get them to say something. But I don't know. Anyway, that's the Google look at things at the moment. World's cheapest laptop. Have you got one?
Yeah, what's an old one?
I think Dr. Ron has. I don't know. It's about time he upgraded, I think, the world's cheapest laptop. Two interesting things to note this week. Firstly, the Taiwanese manufacturer is going to sell possibly the world's cheapest laptop. Now, there was the Aussie Easy thingamabob, which is the one, I can't remember the exact name of it off the top of my head.
The EPC, no.
That's the one? That's the one. It was about $180 or something like that that they've managed to sell as the world's cheapest laptop. Anyway, a Taiwanese manufacturer is going to sell the NPX 9000 for $130, which is another laptop of, I guess, designed to get out there into all those countries that need laptops. Although the only catch is it's being sold in batches of 100, so you can't just pop down the road and buy one. It comes with a 400 megahertz MIPS processor, 1 gig of flash memory, 128 meg SD RAM, and a 7-inch screen similar to the first Aussie EEPCs. Sorry, the Asus. That's the one you just said. It runs on the Linux operating system and is also offering an optional Wi-Fi USB dongle. The laptop also comes with a VGA port to link the systems to full-sized motherboards and an SD card slot for moving files. So, there you go.
Well, that's interesting. So, it's running a MIPS processor, so it probably isn't Windows compliant, whereas the EPC can run Windows.
Yes. Yes. And that's probably hence the reason why it also comes with Linux and is not running a proprietary software because they won't run it. Yeah. All makes sense here. The other interesting thing to note about laptop sales in Australia of recent times, now, call me cynical here, but people aren't buying as many laptops as they used to. When the Rudd government decided recently to remove tax breaks on laptops bought for home use, sales seemed to dry up overnight. I do remember this. They used to let you do salary package PC laptops.
Right. Yes, you could.
And obviously you can't do that anymore. Because I must admit, I had a bit of cash to splash at the end of financial year. Quick, upgrade the laptop. Anyway, this is despite the fact that the government injected lots of cash into the economy in tax cuts to give taxpayers more cash to spend. Executive Chairman of retail giant Harvey Norman, good old Jerry, said that parts of the computer trade had gone to a dead stop overnight. Growth has slowed and other products have managed to pick up the slack. So whether that means televisions or whatever. But
so we won't make it easy for you to buy your own laptop, but we'll give your child one for free.
Yes. Yeah, I wonder how Mr. Rudd's pledge is for getting all of the schools their laptops. They've probably got computers, they just can't plug it in. Now, it's a bit disappointing, isn't it? I don't want to get political tonight, but what happened to all that brouhaha about the National Broadband Network, the chest thumping that happened leading up to the election?
It's and all gone very quiet.
Hasn't it? It's unusually quiet, but yeah. Sorry, Graham.
I'm just shaking my head, Don.
And we're not going to get a national wireless broadband network anymore. That all got canned a little while ago.
The WiMAX thing, yeah. That all got canned, that's right.
What's going on? It's all being knocked on the head for some strange reason.
Mm.
Maybe it's because, as we mentioned earlier on, some of the carriers are having a little bit of problems with their... with their broadband. Here's the Optus thing, the Optus outage. Optus customers in Sydney and Melbourne. When was it? Last week. August the 1st. What was that? Last Friday. Yeah. Experienced some problems with their 3G data service, allegedly. Melbourne's 3G data service went down first, and then Sydney's went down about an hour and a half afterwards. The Optus spokesperson wasn't able to say what the cause was, probably because they were too embarrassed. And technicians were still working on the problem. Normally when you get that answer, someone's tripped over the extension lead, isn't it?
And this is not long after, what was it, a week or so or a bit more ago, someone dug up a bit of optical fibre up in Brisbane and took off a whole lot of...
Oh, that's a backhoe pulled up.
Yeah.
Took off most of Queensland's Optus.
Yeah, Optus phones.
Coverage. Whoops,
and apparently, it happened at a time when they were working on their backup system, so the backups didn't work either.
Oh, is that what happened? Because they usually had a redundancy system.
But the redundancy didn't work either because they were fixing a problem with that. So I wonder whether this is related to them working on that issue of the redundancies not working.
Goodness me. Poor old Optus. All right, take a break.
Not having fun.
We'll be back with more in a moment.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, we're talking about all things internet and lack of it in certain areas, I guess from a government point of view. Remember that internet filtering thing that they were talking about not so long back where you could download a filter free of charge? Once again, that's fallen off
this
the rainbow.
The federal government, how to protect yourself and your family.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. It's fallen off the rainbow. I use that because of the kiddie factor, but it's fallen off the radar too from the adult point of view because it's just disappeared. I don't know what they're doing there. But anyway, it's things along that line have surfaced again. The government's clean feed internet scheme has been buoyed by glowing results from tests to the effectiveness of ISP content filters.
Yeah, so this is instead of downloading a thing to run on your own computer that some 12-year-old can hack around in 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
It's actually filtered at the ISP level.
We're talking about broadband filtering at an ISP level.
Yeah, to stop your kiddies going to places they shouldn't go.
Yes, but who's going to control this? Is this like Big Brother going to be able to do it? Yep. Like Beijing-style firewall-y sort of thing?
Yep.
Okay, well, let's go vote no for this, because what's to stop someone, stopping you from going to a legitimate site? It's like the TiVo, which is scheduled for launch here, controlled and run by Channel 7 because it's their baby. What's to stop them saying, oh, no, you can't record or watch Channel 9?
Yes, we're not going to let you even know the program content.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, anyway, this new ISP device, ISP filtering, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, did a report, and the last of the series was first commissioned in 1993. And it claims that the technology has undergone massive improvements since 2005 when it first was trialled. And, of course, back then the results were nothing less than abysmal. ISP content filtering is part of the government's $125.8 million plan for cyber safety, which will split funds between law enforcement, technology, and education to reduce the proliferation of child porn and inappropriate content. Communications Minister Stephen Conroy said the government will soon be trialling blocking, prohibited, and additional material in a live pilot with ISPs using the filters. They haven't gone on to say which ISPs they are, but I bet you some of them will be big ones.
Yes.
It's only going to slow it down, and we've got a problem with the speed of our broadband in this country anyway.
That's one of the issues, and yeah, I mean, the other one is a purely philosophical one of anti-censorship. The best way, I mean, you wouldn't, as a parent, I hope, trust a clean feed like this from an ISP to mean that you could let your young child operate a computer connected to the internet without supervision.
Hmm.
I mean, you've got young children, Andrew. Would you let your kids wander around the internet unsupervised on a feed like this?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. The only feed that I trust is the feed when I'm sitting with them.
That's right.
Telling them what they can and can't watch. And, because it's not so much the fact that we all know that there are nasty things out there on the internet. It's like,
yep.
And it's no fault of the internet. You walk out into society and there's nasty things happening around the corner.
Oh, look, someone's getting beaten over the head. And it's the same thing. You wouldn't let your kids wander up and down Swanson Street without supervision either.
Wouldn't go anywhere near the city. That's right. The city of Melbourne. It's a bit rough in there at times. But yes, look, and it's exactly the same thing in the online world.
That's right.
Our kids, I'm fortunate because of the nature of the game that I play in, that we do have a server which they go through, and that server can also control via their logon, and we know who they are.
But I still reckon it's not a technological solution.
No, it's not.
The solution, as you say, is to be there with them and to help assist with that. Put the computer in the living room, in a public part of the house where, you know, the screen is visible from you know, the main room or whatever, so that you can keep, even if you're doing something else, you can keep half an eye on what's going on.
I'm just reading a bit of what's going on in the chat room here at the moment. The kids will go to the friend's place. I don't know about that. But I think
the parents should all be talking to each other and helping each other to understand the technology and to do these things better and to supervise better.
Look, I think one of the biggest threats to our kids and online safety is going to be the proliferation of things like the iPhone, where they can actually get unfiltered or device which they can sit on the train or the bus when they're going home, or in the back of the car where you can't quite see the screen.
Yep.
And things will pop up there at the appropriate or most inappropriate times. Mm. But look, it's, I don't know, it's just one of those things where how far do you go? And we could talk about this all night, but
yep,
I just think that, yes, it's one of those things. But anyway, keep an eye out on that. Obviously, there's still some form of murmuring happening out there in the government circles. We might not have fast broadband, but they're still looking at the
how to slow it down.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way to go.
Yes. All right.
The do not call registers are doing well too. I haven't heard anything about that.
Does it work?
I'd have to say that yes, it does work, because I tried registering two numbers on it. One's a private personal home number, and I still get harassed by some people who I think are out of the country type sort of people.
Yeah.
But locally, I haven't had any issues. And at work, well, I get that goddamn phone call every 5 days that says, congratulations, I've won yet another holiday.
Yes.
Have you got that one?
On your mobile?
No. On the fixed line and the Tech Talk radio offices.
I get it on my mobile, Phoebe.
Do you?
Mm.
No, I don't get any. I've been very lucky with my mobile. I don't get any spam like that. So maybe the spam filters are working exceptionally well. Just as another aside to ADSL and Wi-Fi in Australia, we're running out of time. The Aussie Wi-Fi with Starbucks. You heard of Starbucks going, they're closing up half of their stores here and in other parts of the world as well.
Yep.
Starbucks was a fairly good customer of Telstra's when it came to providing wireless access.
Yeah, because that's one of their things, is they provide a hotspot in their shop.
Yeah, shocking coffee. Shocking coffee.
I don't drink coffee.
We're very spoilt here in this town when it comes to coffee, and that's probably the reason why Starbucks is closing up in town.
Right.
Too much competition.
Mass-produced American coffee just doesn't sell.
Look, and it's also a lifestyle thing. People like to sit down with friends and have a good coffee, and I mean a good coffee. My wife took me, she's a tea drinker, she took me to this place. Oh, really nice tea here. And the coffee was like, oh, I can't drink that, I'm sorry. Am I a snob? Maybe call me a coffee snob, I don't care. But anyway, well, Starbucks has gone the way of
the dinosaur.
Yes, and the Wi-Fi is disappearing. So, I don't know, Starbucks, they had 37 stores equipped with Telstra's wireless hotspots, with 11 located in Victoria, 6 in Queensland, 17 in New South Wales, and 3 in Canberra. However, it announced that it's just keeping 23 of its stores in Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane. So poor old Telstra are going to miss out there. Have you used their wireless hotspot? It's pretty pricey, but you can use it.
No, I haven't used it. You see it about from place to place.
When you log on with a broadband card, it says, oh, there's wireless here. Do you want to use that? And you still pay the same rates as you do for mobile broadband. So not bad. Not bad. Okay, some other interesting gossip before we go to a quick music break. Aussie businesses ignoring online customer inquiries. Now, remember when we had Jason Sterling in from Genesis the other day talking about chats and online stuff? When it comes to answering your online customer queries, it looks like most Australian businesses can't really be bothered. While shopping for building quotes for a new backyard, Chris Moriarty, Managing Director of Business Development Firm Strikeforce Sales, filled in an online query, or quotation actually, at a website for ReadyMix, which is apparently a really big concrete company.
Yep.
Anyway, 8 months later, he still hasn't had an answer. But now, seriously, is this where I think, well, I think we alluded to when Jason was in, that we really have to become a bit more savvy when it comes to online responses. I know that in my business, sometimes it's not practical to respond to all the queries that we get. And I mean that purely from a point of view that we do television programs, and some of the viewer questions you get are just not even... If you responded to them all, you would be there till...
Forever.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're a genuine customer inquiry about a product or service that you offer, if you can't deal with that straight away, your customer's going to go elsewhere.
Presumably, yeah.
But I guess, do you then, like we're in a technological workspace, does concrete make any difference? Because it hasn't got technology involved.
Well, I think if you're promoting your wares on the internet, then... Firstly, you're obviously looking for business and for people to come and look at your website and get you out for business. And I guess if you're not going to provide a response, then perhaps you need to put that up front on your website. Here's the information. This is the only information you're going to get. And the method of contact is this phone number or something else.
Not something an email else.
Address. Yep.
Yeah, because it is. It's a bit very much an ordinary thing when people do that. It's just leaves you...
But it makes you wonder what people were thinking by advertising on the web. What did they expect that to do? If they're, you know, we were talking about this with Jason.
Yeah, it's a waste of money putting the website up and having the form on there. And they've obviously paid someone to design it. They've paid someone to host it. Probably paid a lot of money for it.
Probably. And so if you're attracting people.
Yeah, and then wasting all that investment rather than using it.
But also, what did you expect them to do? If they're already on the internet, they're likely to want to talk to you via that technology, not something completely different.
Do you shop online? Do you buy it? Do you have a limit of what you
spend? We talked about this last week.
I know we did. Yeah.
A couple of $100.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? And if you were shopping online and you had a question for a seller, and I'm not talking about eBays or anything like that, but if you had a question for an organization where you're about to put your credit card into and you sent off an email, would you expect a response with that? When? What sort of time frame if it was a reputable company?
If it was one of those shopping cart things, I'd actually expect it to be pretty quick. Because they're about to make an instant sale.
And it's also the only way they make their sale, isn't it?
Whereas if it was a general inquiry about a product, so I'm looking at a web page and I want to know if it does X, Y, Z, but I'm not actually at the checkout stage, I'd probably wait a couple of days and be happy with that.
It's a very interesting dilemma, which I think a lot of consumers, it's new technology and everyone's unsure about it and you don't know what to expect. Dealing with technological companies like phone companies and the likes, yeah, it's not too bad. Like, I cancelled a service the other day with a provider, and funnily enough, you could do that instantly with Telstra over the phone. You could ring them up, say, I'd like to cancel my service, and they go, yep, no worries. But yet, some companies where you send them off an email to say, I'd like to cancel my service, they say, oh, can you print out this form, fax it back to us and sign it, and then maybe we'll get round to it. Like, it's just part of an online service. You need to provide your customers... with a way in and a way out these days, a cancellation service. And I just don't think they force you to do that. They make you ring up or they make you do something that you don't want to do, which you feel uncomfortable with. And I guess, that's where consumers are going. We've got to learn how to deal with these sort of things.
And, not only consumers have to learn how to deal with it, but companies have to learn how to do it better. And you'll find that this will be an area that where things will change as... The kids that are coming through now will expect to be able to deal with people using instant messaging.
What about SMS? Is SMS a bit underutilized when it comes to this sort of technology?
Not according to the cost.
I don't know. I think there are better technologies than SMS for a lot of these things.
Yeah. And then there's the other new technology that we've got, which is the... which I think Telstra are trialling if they haven't not implemented already, where you can go and take a photo with your digital camera of a barcode or something printed on a poster and you SMS it or text it or do whatever it is to it. Next thing you know, it hooks up with your phone number. look, what's the world coming to? All right, and briefly, in other interesting things at the moment, hackers infiltrating legitimate websites.
Yeah.
Now,
nothing new about that.
No. But if you were thinking, oh, no, it'll never happen to me, whereas some nasty software would get installed on your machine and you would surf the sites of the world without fear, do you think that if you stuck to all the reputable websites, like the big companies, that you'd be safe?
You'd expect so.
Yeah, you would. You would, wouldn't you? But unfortunately, no, that is not the case. Let's do a bit of a straw poll in the studio here. Of the as a percentage level of all the reputable companies, how many do you think, and we're talking the really big companies, how many do you think have been infiltrated with nastiness?
I would guess quite a few of them, and mainly because they're big targets. They're the targets that the bad guys are going to go for.
Yeah. Would it surprise you that 60%, over half of the world's largest companies, have had nasty things put on their websites?
That sounds quite plausible to me.
Yep. And that's in the last 6 months too, which is really, really scary. The latest State of the Internet report from WebSense warns that many popular social networking search engines and Web 2.0 sites have suffered temporary infections with cyber tricks such as data stealing and hidden redirects. So there's a lot of it out there.
Yep.
And you see the spam coming through every 5 minutes. You get those one line, you know, headline grabbing things from a person you've never heard of before.
Yeah. Yep.
Have you seen lots of those?
I have seen a huge amount of that lately. That's been very big on the spam in recent times.
And you click those links and you go to one of those sites where it just tries to put some stuff on you.
That's right.
On your system.
Now, quite often though, those sorts of emails and they're not coming from, you know, major companies that have been infiltrated. They're coming from your home PC. You listening out there who didn't install your anti-spyware software. And, you know, if your machine's running slowly and using a lot of internet bandwidth and you don't quite understand why, you're probably sending out all these emails to everybody. Get your machine cleaned up.
So that's what my machine's doing.
Yes. Yep. Spyware on ordinary people's home computers is sending out all this spam.
It's interesting. I upgraded to the latest version of Kaspersky.
I'm
a big fan of Eugene's technology.
Yep. And did it squeal like a pig?
Oh, absolutely. It squeals like a pig. But not for these little ones. These ones are just like phishing sites, but it's not detecting that it's like a phishing site, if you know what I mean. It's just a harmless link to a site which hasn't been registered in any of those databases yet that it does the lookup for when it gets the mail. But no, Eugene's got some new software out, version 2009 of his internet protection suite, which is very nice.
I have to admit, having had a play with a trial of it, it does do a great job cleaning up some of this nonsense.
The thing that I like about it is it tells you what it's doing. It's not one of these things like Norton's where you load it up and hope for the best.
Yes, we'll protect you, trust us.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But no, Kaspersky's actually lets you educate it. It asks you for, like, it does spam for you as well. And it says, show me some spam folders. So you just point it to your junk mail folder in whatever your boxes are. And it says, okay, and learns from those. And then the other great thing it does too is it creates its own whitelist on the way. Now, a whitelist is a list of acceptable emails that you want to actually receive people from.
Yep, so you don't have to
receive from people.
Yeah, so you don't have the problem that a lot of people have where your anti-spam filter chucks legitimate emails in the spam folder people that you know.
So when Adam emails me, it doesn't get bounced back and he doesn't get irate because I've actually sent him an email and it's learned.
All 25 times.
Exactly, yes. So it actually learns that, you know, an email from Adam is good. That can come through. An email from people that you reply to is good. So, and I think that's a really good feature. When it talks to that.
They have some good software. It's a little bit more expensive than some of the other antivirus packages around, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's worth every cent of it, if you ask me.
Yeah, I suspect you might be right.
it is very good. So, anyway, I didn't mean to turn it into a bit of an ad for Kaspersky, but with all the spam and stuff.
It's legitimate to talk about good quality products.
Absolutely. With all the spam and stuff that's out there at the moment coming through, it's well worth it. Now, just before we go on to the Oddspot gadget and website of the week, the Olympic site. What's that phishing Olympic site? You had it up online. It's still around, isn't it?
Oh, it was still around at the start of the show. BeijingTicketing.com.
Yeah, what are they offering at the moment?
Oh, look, I've got on there.
Can you get opening day ceremony tickets? What are they worth?
Well, I'm just trying to buy some tickets to the softball finals, and apparently I can buy a couple of tickets for $650. So.
Go for the synchronized swimming. I want to know what they're worth.
It's just about to... All right, hang on. Synchronized swimming. I'm sure it's here somewhere.
Oh, he's serious. He's online talking.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Don't put in your credit card number.
talk amongst yourselves, no, everybody, while we do this. Internet works live, it works
the,
well.
Team free routine finals, if you want, Class A tickets, $200 each. Yep, we can buy those, a couple of those.
Fantastic.
Yep. Now, for those who don't understand, this is a fake website. These will take your credit card number, they'll take your money, and you won't get any tickets, and you'll get to Beijing, and you won't get into the synchronized swimming final or anything else. So, and they still haven't taken it down, despite the fact that it's been all over the news, in the last day or so.
You would think that authorities would be able to gain access to a name server and say, please delete this from your records, but obviously...
But it's been the weekend since it's hit the news. It's still the weekend in America. It's always yesterday in America, so...
What's the... is it a .com?
Yeah, it's BeijingTicketing.com. They say it's hosted in America, although I noticed that the phone numbers on there to ring are +44 numbers, which are UK numbers.
Oh.
So it's no doubt it's one of these cross-jurisdictional, really difficult ones to track down who's really responsible.
Absolutely.
But as we go to air on a Monday night, Americans are just yawning and stretching and trying to come to terms with Monday morning. So
hello to all of you. Good morning, breakfast radio, as we are known as in some parts of the world. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're running late now. Back with the Oddspot gadget and website of the week after this.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers.
And I've got some residual powers.
We can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
odorous sensitive fingerprints. Now,
we may have digressed.
Talk radio. Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers.
Don't open things that are as good as you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Have you ever just got bored with looking at the traffic behind you in your rearview mirror in your car and wondered if there might be something more exciting that you could do?
What have you got in mind, Graham?
We've got a Chinese company is offering a range of rearview mirrors with LCD screens built into them. Displaying video off your
reversing DVD camera, right?
You could hook it up.
Fantastic.
Yeah, some of them have got designed to hook up your reversing
what
camera.
What you're telling is you're driving along in the rearview mirror and running into the people in front of you and your airbag will go off.
There's a whole range of them here. Some of them even have touchscreen and you can use it Bluetooth as your Bluetooth hands-free kit for your phone with a touchscreen to dial on your rearview mirror in your car.
Oh.
There's a Chinese company that's offering a whole range of these, ranging from about $50 to just over $100. So
are they for
not
real?
They are for real.
Oh, my goodness me. Just what you need in your rear
view
mirror.
As if the roads weren't dangerous enough with...
How do they work? Is it like a heads-up technology? Because you'd still want to see your mirror in the back of it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's got an LCD, TFT LCD screen, same as in your phone and so on, just built in behind the mirror. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
Just what you need. All right, there you go.
Exactly
the Tech Talk Radio...
Gadget of the week.
Gadget
car
of the week.
TV.
Absolutely. Highly legal in this country, I should imagine. Yeah.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Now, I've got an interesting website for you this week. This is one which it's been around for a while. And if you're into animated music and music which has been computer generated and animation which has been generated to match the computer music, then this site is for you. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, go to this site and have a look at it. It's all the W's dot animusic.com, animusic.com. Now, composers obviously write this great music, and then electronically it's connected to computer animation, and balls fly around the screen, and fingers pluck guitars, and it's all perfectly in sync, and it's all amazingly generated. There's one there which is amazing. It's a spaceship one where these space guys come up and they play this rock and roll on top of this spaceship to this amazing music, and it's all perfectly in sync, and it just looks
fantastic.
Absolutely terrific. So it's one of those voyeurism type websites. Just go along
and
have a look.
Can you download the video clip that it makes for you?
Yes, you can, and you can get them in high def and all that sort of stuff, and you can buy the DVDs online, but go and have a look. It's very interesting the way they do it, and the website, once again, for those of you who are just typing it into their browsers now, all the W's dot A-N-I-M-U-S-I-C. That's animusic.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
No problem here. Japanese people who do these sort of things exceptionally well have done it yet again. Japanese investors have devised... Sorry, did I say investors? I meant inventors.
Inventors, yes.
Japanese inventors have devised a silencer for a toilet. Nothing like a bit of toilet humour at the end of the at the end of the program, is there?
Patented, what we've come to expect.
Absolutely, and Dr. Ron's not here, so had to live up to his reputation somehow. Patents have been just issued, revealed by in the design by staff at Inax Corporation, and they've been given the patent number this week, and it muffles the sound of water flushing. But obviously it doesn't result in the... it doesn't reduce the noise that's being emitted by the person using the toilet.
Right.
So that could have detrimental effects, really, when you think about it. It could have a nulling effect. You know, when people sit on the loo and they sing for good reason. Anyway, I just thought that would be bizarre. But there you go. There's another really interesting use of technology,
a
which...
toilet silencer.
...could only come out of Japan. So you can... It'd be like a silent movie, really, isn't it? Someone flush the toilet and you don't hear that bit or something. Anyway...
Unbelievable.
I'm sorry. Should we go now?
With that? I think we should.
With that in mind. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Tech Talk Radio. You've been listening to Graham Callaghan, JD's over there, and myself, Andrew McComb, over this side of the panel. And we're going to do it all again same time next week on the iPod or radio station that you may be listening to. It's been an absolute pleasure. And until then, let's hope your technology works for you, because there's nothing worse than when it doesn't. So, till same time next week, come join us on the chat room, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. We love hearing from you. Your dilemmas, send them across to us. Till next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Panelists, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.